Welcome to the Events Innovator Show, where we explore the ideas and strategies that are transforming events. Get ready to unlock the secrets to creating extraordinary experiences. And now, here's your host, Phil Michon.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Event Innovator Show. I am with a premier event innovator today, my friend Tahira. We have known each other for, I think, about a decade.
At least.
We met at SEMA, introduced by our friend Megan Powers, and she is head of programming for IMEX. She's author of several books, one on intentional design, but the most recent is the RO, or our KPI is joy. So welcome to the show, Tahira.
Well, thanks, Phil. You have a book too that's pretty great. So I think it's, you know, we could just talk about extraordinary events for a long time, but we have so many things to talk about today, don't we?
We do. You might even say this conversation could be unforgettable.
It could be unforgettable.
It could be. I hope it is. But tell me why you wrote this recent book, and go ahead and give us the full title.
Our KPI is joy, how live events catalyze happiness, productivity, and trust. I wrote intentional event design in 2017, and I revised it after the pandemic. It is a textbook for how to do events, and it is used as a textbook. It's used in NYU. We're using it at BCIT and SDSU. It is really what's so fun about teaching intentional event design is actually seeing students, you know, which are, you know, they could be in their, from their 20s to their 50s. It honestly depends because it's an adult education class. See them light up as they understand that events are not just logistics. Events are actually about the feeling people leave with. Mm-hmm. And so the second book was really an extension of that thinking to say, you know, it's really great that we go to events as a life highlight. We tell stories about them. They are unforgettable, right? We have things that we carry through. And yet we have all these really crazy metrics around them. You know, how many registrations did you sell? What, you know, did we meet our revenue metrics? Did we have X amount of exhibitors? Did we have X amount of speakers sometimes? Like, it's not about it. None of those things, all of those things are important, but none of those things are what drives the success of your event. What drives the success of your event, virtual or live, but definitely live, is the people. And the people came and they had a memorable time. And that from that, they, when they have a good time, when we come and we go through all of the emotions of anticipating and arriving at an event, and then we enjoy the event, we are more open to learning. We are more open to connection. And it is the learnings and the connections that are the things that become the memories. And those are the things when we take them back into our organizations that help us. The learning is going to probably help us build some productivity. The connections are going to help us on collaborations and innovations. And the trust is going to be the thing that helps drive everything about business. And we don't get to do any of those things in a way that is as powerful as a live event. So I'm standing behind the idea that our KPI, and it should be measurable, is joy. And in fact, we're going to do some work on measuring joy and what it means at IMEX this year.
Oh, so, fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, let's define joy, even though I think we all can feel what it means. But as it relates to an event, what do you mean by joy?
I mean that feeling that you are open to learning and connection. And that you have connected with people, you've learned something, you have come away with something that makes you feel a sense of I don't like happiness as an emoji, but something that is inside of you that makes you open up a little bit more. So you open up to another person, you open up to a new idea. You know, the thing about joy is like it kind of bubbles, right? Like it bubbles up. And which is really the cool thing about it is you're like, oh, now I feel like, what? That just happened? You know, so, and it can happen in so many different ways. And it, you know, it's an ephemeral, I can't even say that word. Yeah. It's a very, you know, it's a feeling that's hard to hang on to. So ephemeral feeling, right? So it's hard to hold on to. You know, and the thing about joy is you can't know joy without knowing sorrow. You can't know what it feels like to feel good if you haven't been sad. You know, part of finding joy is like, how joyful have you felt when you have bought something at IKEA and then actually successfully built it? So imagine when we're faced with real world challenges, you know, we can feel a lot of joy from overcoming a challenge, you know, and again, in events, challenges at work are very difficult for reasons that have nothing to do with the actual challenge. Challenges at work are difficult because of all of the environment that they're in. So you might have some external pressures. We need to solve this problem right now. And then you have the pressures of, well, I look good to my team doing this. Well, my clients notice that this was a good thing. But so there's a lot of things you can do in events and present challenges and prototypes and spaces for dialogue and collaboration in live events that you can feel good about solving that problem. But now you can also take that good feeling and that problem solving into your organization and have a better way to tackle those challenges that is going to create more positivity. And more positivity leads to more sales. Nobody bought something that they wanted to have if that doesn't bring them some joy. There's things we have to buy, like we need a new furnace or something like that. But if I'm at a trade show and I'm selling something, what I'm selling is the experience people are going to have in my property or by using my service. But we don't count that. Oh, no. Why would we talk about joy at events? Like, no, we've got numbers. We've got serious things to talk about with this event. What we have to get to our executive level with is, how do you want people to feel when they leave this event? Nobody has said, gosh, I hope they don't like it. So why can't we then make joy a measurable metric? It just seems so obvious when you start thinking about it. You know, and I think one of my favorite things was, there's a woman who read it. But on LinkedIn she posts, and she's just, you know, she said, so I saw this book. I don't know her. So I saw this book, I ordered it. It was going to take 2 days to get here. So I downloaded it to my Kindle. I was just going to glance at it. And 3 hours later, I was writing joy metrics for our large financial organizations planning team.
Wow.
Yes. Right. So it's possible for us to understand how to do it. You know, and I know I've had several texts today, actually. The Event Leaders Exchange is having their meeting in Chicago, and they're doing their speed networking, and they're all talking about my book. So, well,
you tapped into something here. You mentioned what we face at work. And when we arrive at an event, if you're coming for the first time, maybe you're coming out of that work environment where there's been a lot of pressure on you. Could have been toxic, could just be the pressure of deadlines and all the things, could be family pressures. How do you create a sense of joy as people arrive? How do you transition them from whatever they were experiencing before? And it's, you know, it's strangers. It's, I've never been here before. IMX is a huge event, you know, and it's a large, you know, building that you're coming in, and you might feel lost and overwhelmed by it. I don't even recognize this. How do you create joy as people are entering into an event?
Well, I think IMX has always been a place people wanted to go to. So, you know, as somebody who went to it for a long time before I worked there, you know, it's a place that people wanted to be. So we already have that as an anchor to start with. But what we've been doing in the last few years is really focusing on our first timers. So there's first timers webinars. We can pull up, we can pull up blog posts from other people who've talked about what you should be doing at the show, from comfortable shoes to hydrating to being friendly, putting on a smile, taking the time to meet people. So with our first timers, we've now done, I think we're going into maybe our fourth show of offering a first timer session where people can come learn a little bit, like just be oriented to a little bit to the show, and then meet a friend before they leave that space, so that, you know, it's like you feel like, oh, I actually do know somebody here. And, you know, there's so many activations that happen as you arrive at IMX through that whole first hallway. And, you know, giant letters you can take your pictures with, and holograms that greet you, and all kinds of different things. So you don't, sometimes arriving at a big show can often feel overwhelming. You know, am I at the right place? Did I come in the right door? So it's about, you know, good directions, good signage, people greeting you. We actually have humans who greet you. And then the ability to go through and have other things to distract you in a way that is positive. Like I've seen a great activation with art or music or some photos or, you know, so you're just like, oh, I'm not actually alone here. There's things to do and people to meet and things to see. And then of course, once you get into the show, everybody has a job to do, right? So whether you're an exhibitor or a buyer or a visitor buyer or an attendee or a speaker, everybody has somewhere to go. So it's about making it really easy for them to find the way to get there. And then again, when you come to a booth, being greeted, when you come to a session, knowing that you're going to learn something. Yeah, there's just lots of different ways that we think about it all throughout, making, you know, lots of water stations easy for people, workspaces where people can go and sit and relax when they have to catch up on emails or write a proposal that has to go to the client that minute. There's a place to do that. Or to go into, you know, the resilience room, or this year we're going to have a circadian cove with Olympian meetings. So it's going to be beside the resilience room. So the resilience room is really designed for our neurodivergent population who really need a bit of quiet time and space to really get away. So we have that available for them. And then the circadian cove has activations throughout the day that are designed to mirror our circadian rhythms. So a little bit quieter, you know, a little bit more active in the morning, a little bit quieter during parts of the day. So giving us space to sometimes just breathe, sometimes do a bit of movement. So different ways of looking at how we can create opportunities for people to embed into the experience. And the thing is that sometimes, you know, I'll often go and use our well-being room and just spend 5 minutes just resetting. And you come back kind of a new person. If somebody just takes you through a bit of breathing or stretching, you know, you might have a little bit of a headache that started, but you come back and you're just like, oh, okay, now I'm ready to do this again. So I think that having spaces for that is really important. We're also working with the Australian and American Psychological Associations they're launching a new neurodivergent certification for shows that really looks at all of the different things that you have control of in a show. Because what we're finding, of course, like anything in our events industry, all of a sudden everyone's an expert when they're not really experts, but they say they're experts. So they put in a quiet, like, you know, set aside a breakout room, call it a quiet room, make it dark. Okay, we're ready for the neurodivergent. There's so many more things that can be done. And right. So they're creating a proper certification. So we'll be doing a case study for that this year, which we're, you know, what I love about IMEX is level 2 would have been actually really easy for us. And so Ollie, who works with us on designing our experiences, is like, well, let's do level 3 because that's going to push us to be better. Mm. You know, and that I think is one of the things that for me is a joy in working at IMEX is that it's good enough button.
Tell me what you mean by level 2 and level 3.
I don't know. I don't know exactly yet. So because it's a certification that's, you know, it's an evolving certification. But for example, if we just, so all of the things that we're doing, so all the things I've said, well-being room, resilient space, water's available, quiet places, places to work, all of that is level 2. Like it's, you know, so we're good, but what we want to be is better. So what are the deeper things that we can be doing to thinking about, you know, creating different types of educational environments, creating different types of spaces for people. So again, for us, it's a little bit of a learning curve. And that's good. Like we can't, as humans, stop learning.
Yeah.
No joy in that.
I want to back up for a minute because you've been describing a lot of things that you bake into the event, some of which is to create psychological safety. Yeah. So people know where to go, when to go, the neurodivergent opportunities, the circadian. But you were talking about that corridor as people are coming down the hallway. Yeah. And I remember going down there my first time. And one of the things you're doing that I think sparks joy is doing surprising things, a hologram greeting you. I remember there being a music ensemble out there they were doing some interesting things that I hadn't seen done before. So there was some intrigue. that you were building along the way. It wasn't just the typical things. And it seems to me that might be part of what you're doing is surprise and delight, getting people to smile, getting all the endorphins that kick in just when you smile. You want to elaborate on that?
Yeah, no, I think, well, you pretty much just wrapped it up for me in a nice little bow there, Phil. So yes, we do all of those things. And I think it's also, you know, part of surprise and delight is, you know, with our experience team, you know, when people want to come back, it's not about coming back and just doing the same thing. Yes. It's about, you know, how are you going to come back and show up a little bit differently? Or, you know, maybe this isn't the year that, you know, this is going to be something that year that we use that space for something a little bit different. You organize the show, so you know how hard it is to say no to somebody that's been a really great partner. There's no joy in that. But then I also think it also quite often offers our partners an opportunity to grow a little bit. You know, so one of the things I talk about probably in both my books is, you know, the people that I've worked with where, you know, we have a conversation, I have an idea, they say no. And then they call me a week later and they're like, okay, we figured out how to do that thing. So, you know, and that's happened to me lots of times where, you know, it's just like, I have an idea that's completely ridiculous. Like, could we have, could the circus performers hang from those big lanterns that are, you know, they have these, you know, this, so Underground Circus has these lanterns that you hang from the ceiling that are 15 feet tall and they're beautiful and they're lit and they're, and I was like, but could people be in them and then like, just like for 90 minutes and then like drop out in the middle of the reception? And it's like, no. So, but they went back and they noodled on it. And they said, yes. Like the things that were the no for them was there was no way for a circus performer can't just drop out of the sky. They need to warm up. So how would they warm up? What if somebody was in the sky for 90 minutes and got scared? What if they, you know, needed to get out? You know, what about the people that are down below? We have to have, you know, a safety circle underneath, like, so all of these things. And so, you know, so the solution was, you know, we put them up in the air, we pulled up all the ribbons, we had them just hanging out up there. But there was, you know, there was a scissor lift available if somebody really got stuck. They had radios and they figured out a way inside. So because it sits on like a wooden donut, so they figured out a way inside that the circus performers could all warm up.
Okay.
So that they would be able to then do the act. And then we used dancers that we'd had earlier in the evening, came in and did another dance. They all created safety circles under all of the lanterns. The music changes, poof, all of a sudden people drop from the sky. Surprise and delight.
No one knew they were up there.
Nobody knew they were up there. They're just lanterns in the sky. That's amazing. Right. So, but what's more amazing is that it was a no, right? So, you know, it's like, no, we can't do that. And then it's like, oh, maybe we could do that. And I think that, you know, again, it's like collaboration, innovation, thinking differently. It's just, for me, is like a story that just highlights all of those things that are so magic about events. It's like, we don't say no, we figure out how to do it.
But what's important to me is you had the attendee experience as the goal. You 100%. Wanted to create a moment of joy. Yeah. You knew that this would do that. Let's just figure out how.
Yes.
Maybe the exact thing has to change because the how is impossible, but what is possible? And I love that you led that and they were willing to go back to the drawing board and say, well, there is a way. And so that's an amazing example. All right, let's back up for a second. You kind of hinted at this, but you know, I'm an event owner, not the producer, planner, but I'm the owner of this event. Convince me why I need to focus on joy as opposed to retention, ROI, you know, and getting more speakers and getting their scores up or whatever the metric might be that I normally look at. Why should I measure joy?
Well, Phil, imagine, if you will, that you would like, how many of you, what percentage of people would you like to have return year on year?
Oh, I'd love to see 50% plus.
Okay. So if 50% of the people, which I think that's quite realistic actually, because 50% of the people, they might change jobs, they might send somebody else from their team. You know, there's always going to be reasons people can't return to an event. But imagine if 51% of those people during your event experienced more joy. So what are the things that they're doing? They're coming in, they are going through the whole experience. If they have more joy, it's probably because they've met more people is going to be one thing. So now they're talking to other people about the event more. They might be talking about it on social channels. They might be taking more selfies and showing people what a great experience they're having. They might be really working to get more people to come, because if I have such a good time and met five new friends, don't I want other people that I work with to? Of course I do, because now I'm building my community. So you're using that joy, that sense of joy, that sense of interest, that sense of I've built some dialogue and some space for intimacy and for people to connect, which is a joyful feeling that I've connected with somebody and made a new friend. Well, now I want to share that with more people. So that's one way. If we say we want to have every education session, you know, like we both produce a lot of education sessions at our events, and we want to have those education sessions all be a 4 out of 5 on a scale of I really liked these sessions on average, because again, we know we're going to have some 5s, we know we might have some 3.5s, even no matter how hard we work with those speakers. But imagine if every speaker was coming because they wanted to do something that was going to be joyful, transformational, make people think differently. And now your scores go up. Well, now your whole education rises. As soon as the whole education rises, more people are talking about it, more people are socializing it, more people are going to want to come back. So, and they might find such value in that education that they're now going to also bring more people on their team. Even if it's one more person, that's going to might be one new person. So you might not get your 50% retention, but you might get 1% more in total overall registration, or 2% or 3%. And so every single time that you are doing something that is intentionally looking towards how do we design for joy, every single one of those things is an opportunity to touch more people in a positive way that is going to want them to come back and do more at your event.
Yeah, it's interesting. We had somebody after a session tell, I think it was one of our volunteers, they said, I got an idea in that session. I already know how I'm going to make $10,000 when I go back to the office, just from one idea out of one session. And if you see those kinds of things happening throughout the event, that's why I tell speakers, be as actionable as you can, because you want those quick wins. And you and I know if people get quick wins, they're going to feel good. They're going to smile, say, man, they're going to boast about, wow, they gave me so much value. I already got way more value than the price of the event.
So that's I said it, you know, joy is going to build happiness, productivity, and trust.
Yeah.
So that's absolutely productivity right there. But it's also, now they also have more trust in your event.
Yeah.
Right? They're going to want to come back next year and find another $10,000 idea.
Yeah, 100%. That speaks to every event organizer. We want more people coming back. We want to see people being more productive. Yes, speaker scores going up and up and up. I mean, speakers want that. Like we tell them, you know, we get an average of 4.5, which is ridiculous that we've gotten that high, but that's because the speakers aspire to give the best talk of their life. And they're disappointed if they get below a 4.5. It's like,
absolutely,
got a D. Come on. It's still pretty good. So,
I mean, you have, you know, sort of like 20 to 60 minutes to wow people. So, you know, you have to bring it. You have to really think about what they're going to experience from that.
So how do you keep the joy going all year long if it's an annual event? Because I would imagine that's one of your goals. You want it to happen during the event, but are there things that you do to keep it going?
Do we? So let's drill into this a little bit. So we have an annual event. You know, I think back a decade ago, you know, my job was working at a mobile app company. You know, and we would be like, oh, you can use your mobile app to build a year-round community and everyone's going to be engaged all the time.
Oh, no, they're not.
They're not. And you know what? That's okay. So because we have, it's like if you had your birthday every day, would you celebrate your birthday every day?
No.
And even, you know, like some of us might be a little more into birthdays than others and might stretch them out slightly more than others. I don't know who I'd be talking about. Whether it's birthday week or birthday month, like honestly, by birthday 3 weeks, I'm good. So, you know, but so I really think that with events, what we want to do is to pique enough interest from event to event that it stays on the radar, right? So if something is coming and reminding me at month one, month two, month six, when I open up my next registration, then great. You know, if you, let's use an example of one that we're going to be familiar with. So TED. So TED Global pretty much sells out to the same audience every year with a few new people that spaces, there's for spaces for a few new people. And it's almost sold out by the time that that first event ends. And they've been doing that for 30 years. That is not a typical model. So, right. So, and you know, those people aren't talking all through the year. They're not watching a, probably not even watching a TED talk every day. But they have it on their radar because the experience they have while they are there is meaningful enough that they want to return again and again and again. Then there's also a group of people who will go once because it's an investment and they can't always make that investment. Or they might not feel the need to make that particular investment and will look for another event that will feed them. All of these things are normal event things. So, but if we want to be the event that 51% of the people return to year over year, then let's look at how you can tap into those touch points that are going to remind them specifically. And we can do this in so many easy ways now. You know, it's like going to SEMA again this in 2 weeks. And now I can tap the button that lets me take a picture of myself. And then my facial recognition technology is enabled. And now not only am I going to be able to just pick up my registration when my face walks past a kiosk, I'm going to, much like boarding an airplane in some countries now, I am now also going to be able to have photos that with me in them. And they'll be able to send me photos with just me in them. I don't have to scroll through the 200 photos the photographer took that day looking for the one memory because that memory is being delivered to me. So imagine if you were enabling that kind of technology at your event. And then, you know, 6 months through the year, you're just like, hey, do you remember when you were here? You are at this event. You know, however that's sent. In your case, it could be sent on social because you have a social media marketing world, right? So, you know, but it's, there's so many ways now of using the tools that we have to create little mini touch points for people through the year that, you know, oh, you know, in 3 weeks, we're going to be launching our tickets. Do you remember how much fun you had last year? Great. So do you want to click this button so that you're the first ones to get the tickets? Probably. You know, Club Itchy is another good example. 2018, they did their secret family reunion. We all flew to New York and we didn't know where we were going. We just had to bring a passport, got on a plane and went to Tuscany. Right. Amazing. So they're doing that again this year. This year it's, you know, relatively expensive ticket price for a week long event. Mm-hmm. And they dropped the first 50 of 100 tickets and they sold out in 20 minutes.
Oh my goodness.
They dropped the second one lot today. And probably if we went on social, we'd probably see that that sold out too. But they have been building that community diligently every day by offering things to their Slack, very active Slack channel, for 7 years.
Yeah.
So people trust that community is going to deliver the experience.
I would say they're one of the few examples that have built a community that is year long.
Yes.
And it started surprisingly. You know, I was on that Italy trip with you as well. Yes. And that group that's in WhatsApp is still active. Surprisingly. But then they took us over to Slack and that group is profound. But most events don't have that. I think there's a different way, though, that events do have an ability to create, you know, if it's a joy or if it's just a positive memory. And that's when you create transformation. That's when that idea that they got there is fanned into flame and now becomes that moment where they say, that happened at IMEX, that happened at SEMA, that happened at Social Media Marketing World, that happened at TED. Yep. Now it becomes this anchor of, I can't miss it. And there's this feeling, and David Adler talked about it as goosebumps, that whenever you think about that moment, you get a tear in your eye, you get that goosebumps actually return because that moment was so profound. And I know every moment can't do that, but I think if we can create moments like that, it does have this feeling of, every time that story comes up, I remember that event.
Well, and you know what we can't, what we can and can't, plan for is when that moment's going to happen for somebody. But what I feel have a responsibility to do, as event designers is to set those stages where there is, there is from the time that you are committed to this event, you have the psychological safety of knowing you can anticipate it. You can be excited about it. When you arrive, you're going to have a nice arrival experience. Even if your plane is delayed, you're still going to have a nice arrival experience. You are going to then, through that event, find ways that you are going to be meeting people and having those moments and those conversations. So, in large conferences, large trade shows, that are not designed, I went to the College of Extraordinary Experiences in 2018. It's every moment is designed for some kind of transformation. And I loved it. And I have sent somebody else every single year. I didn't need to go back personally for a transformation, for that kind of a transformative experience. I would go again in the future at some point. But the people that have gone every year that I've recommended have had profound transformational experiences, and have really found ways that they can take those learnings forward and change their career a little bit, or, different opportunities and ways of going through things. So it's also about knowing what your event is meant to deliver. Right. So, but don't waste people's time, basically. So don't have people just show up, ungreeted, not feeling welcome, feeling apprehensive about where to go, not sure how to navigate, not finding the kind of education that they need, not kind of finding the kind of food they need. Let's just erase all of those barriers that can be erased and designed so that people feel welcome. Use the humans that you have to welcome them. Create a little bit of awe and excitement, open up our minds, get them going. Sometimes you're going to have speakers that, people do laugh, dance, cry. Sometimes you're going to have speakers, that's not their role. That's okay. Right. Some of the other things that we've put into IMEX have been tough talks in the last year. We recognized there was a lot of mental health struggles, especially post-pandemic, and that there's a lot of things going on. And the tough talks have been defined for me by, I craft about 120 of the 250 sessions that we have at the show. A lot of them come in through partners in different ways, but the tough talks have come because people have said, I'd really like to talk about grief, cancer, suicide, IVF, all those different things. And if somebody's willing to lead those conversations from a place of authenticity, they've been so incredibly powerful for the people who have attended those sessions. And I wouldn't, but also how lucky am I to go to our CEO and say, hey, Karina, I have an idea that this year we're going to talk about men, mental health, and suicide. We're going to do like a closed door Chatham House Rules session. Like, what do you think? And she, bless her, didn't look at me like I was insane. And she just said, who's going to do it? Who's leading that? She didn't say I couldn't do it, couldn't try it. Oh, that's not a good idea. That doesn't match our values. No, it actually 100% matches our values. Taking care of people, leading together, it's, but again, that's not going to happen at every event. It's certainly not going to happen at every large trade show, and that's okay. So I think it's know who your people are. Know what you want them to experience and design for that. And don't waste their time. And if you're an organization hosting an event, an association or a corporation, don't bring people together. Don't spend millions of dollars. Events are expensive to bring people together and do nothing with that time. Bring people together with purpose. Bring people together to get them excited about, if you're a corporation, get them excited about where they work and who they work with. Let them get to know people. try different things, you know, have a band, have a karaoke bar, have a knitting circle. Doesn't, you know, doesn't like let the humans show up as humans and give them space to connect with people on human levels. And, you know, if it's an association, you have a lot of responsibilities as an association to bring people together, usually for some kind of learning that they need to do quite often to keep their jobs. You know, so there's very much a business side of a certification and professional growth and CEUs that need to be earned. But that doesn't mean that you can't go to those really important sessions and then still come together in ways that allow people to connect and find out that they have a lot of the same challenges and have peers and colleagues. You know, both your show and IMEX are really standalone shows that bring together people with a common interest, in your case, social media, in our case, the mice industry. They are shows that bring together, to some extent, buyers and sellers, but they are also shows that bring together peers and colleagues and competitors and people that need to solve problems and people that want to make a difference.
Absolutely. I think you've said several important things. You know, if you've got a group that has to get CEs, they have to be there. So how do you turn that into something that's joyful, which is being human, creating the connections that they need so that they feel like, well, yes, I have to, but actually I wouldn't want to miss it. And so I think that's where those memories, that's where those moments of joy, they feel those things that's like, I want to see Tahira again, because those conversations that we've had in the past have been so good. I can't wait to see where we're going to go this year and to talk through, you know, these things I've wanted to talk to others about that I can't do within my company because, you know, whatever. So I think you've laid out a lot of really interesting things.
Yeah. The first, sorry to interrupt.
No, good.
The first large event I worked on, was the 11th International Conference on AIDS in 1996. And we started working on it in 1993 because it took a long time to plan events in the olden days, folks. So, you know, but what a time. You know, we brought 15,000 people to Vancouver. We brought 1,500 of them were people living with HIV and AIDS that came on scholarships. And so, you know, the education that we had to do so that people understood that by being in the same room with somebody with AIDS didn't mean you were going to get AIDS. You know, so the opportunity to educate people on the reality of it was incredible. But to bring those doctors together, to bring together the people who literally discovered the virus and developed the antiretrovirals that were saving lives, the people that did our artwork should have died. They would have died within a year of that event. And one of them is still living. So, you know, it's when you bring people together who, one of the things that always strikes me about, if, you know, my husband is a boiler safety officer. I can actually think of nothing more boring than sitting at one of his conferences. He can probably think of nothing more boring than sitting at one of mine. So, right. And that's okay. You know, this is the thing we need to remember about conferences is that we are bringing together people with a like-minded interest. And as the organizers, I don't have to know anything about what a boiler safety inspector does, but I do have to know a lot about setting up the space so that those boiler safety inspectors can have the best conversations that they can possibly have. Because you know what they're responsible for? They're responsible for keeping very large buildings and arenas and hospitals and, you know, making sure that those large buildings don't blow up. So right. I want them to have good conversations. And that's, you know, again, it's joy for some people that they're going to come away from those conversations feeling a sense of richness and conversation and dialogue and the same sense of joy that I'm going to find sitting down and having a conversation with you or any of the many people that we're lucky enough to know in who love the event space as much as we do.
I think that's a really good point. So if you're a boiler maker or you're doing it for accountants or engineers, every one of those events should feel different, but it still starts with understanding the humans and what do they need to get out of it. And we as event organizers have to ask those questions. It's, you know, the old thing, we can't design an event for ourselves. We have to know who that demographic is, what they need, and what works at IMEX with holograms. I wouldn't do that. First of all, I don't have the budget. People are like, why are you doing that? But I'm going to do something that you wouldn't do too. So I think every event should have those things that's unique to their audience. So, well, this has been a great conversation. I know that we need to bring this to an end because you're going to have to go, but we're at the end anyway. So I'm going to pull out my saxophone and have our little saxophonic moment, but I'd love for you to give me three words. I'm sure joy has to be one of the words from this conversation, but what would two more words be?
Joy, intention, and culture.
Tahira, thank you so much for being on the show today. Let everyone know where they can find out more about your book, more about you. Where do you love to connect with people?
Well, probably the easiest way to connect with me is on LinkedIn. It's where I spend most of my social time. And the book, our KPIs, Joy and Intentional Event Design, are both on Amazon in all the countries, basically, that you can possibly, that Amazon is in. And yeah, so you can find me at either of those places. And, you know, one of the things you said at the beginning that you're leaning into is leadership and culture. And so the other, let's call it project that we've been working on is Strategy Table. So which is a startup that is focused on facilitating change for leaders. And
fantastic.
Bringing together some of the work that we're doing there. So, you know, I had to do something with all that work that I did on my master's program. So, which was, you know, it was a master's of creativity and change leadership. So, so we're doing a lot of that. So one day we can have a conversation about all of that.
We will do that. Well, thank you again for being on the show. Folks, make sure to follow Tahira. Let's go change the world one event at a time.
Yes, let's do it. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the Event Innovator Show. Connect with Phil on philmachon.com and be sure to subscribe and never miss an episode.